Okay. Right. We are here today at Thought Bubble talking with Al Ewing, the new writer on Metamorpho, The Elemental Man, number one. Hiya, Al. How are you?
I'm all right. I'm doing okay. It's late in the day on the first day of Thought Bubble, so I'm sort of getting my sea legs back in.
Okay, so I'll keep it nice and easy for you with some easy questions. The first one, DC Comics. It's been a long time coming, I feel. Why now dipping your foot into DC Comics?
Well, I was on the exclusive contract for a very long time with Marvel. But I think more and more I kind of had a sort of, I guess, the desire to like spread my wings a bit, to kind of like play around, because I've played around in the Marvel toy box like a lot. I've kind of like plumbed the depths of their continuity pretty extensively at this point. And I guess I was thinking like, no, I'm interested in what DC are about. And like I've been hearing from the people who were currently working at DC, I was hearing good things. I was hearing like, oh, hey, if you want to cross the aisle, now's probably the time. And I just thought, yeah, it's time for a change. It's time to kind of like spread my wings a little bit and see what I can do over there. Because, you know, I mean, I'm not just, obviously, I got my start with superheroes Marvel. The first American superhero comic I ever read was Secret Wars, that reprint they had in the UK. But like all through late 80s, definitely all through the 90s, I was a big DC reader. I read like all of the Triangle Era.
Yes.
Of Superman.
Yes.
I was reading like Animal Man, Doom Patrol, all the Morrison stuff. Obviously, I was into Alan Moore Swamp Thing as it was happening. So, you know, this was also a thing. And like, you know, DC had a very different energy, but it was, you know, I was still reading all of those comics. So, yeah, it is a part of, it's a part of my kind of
DNA.
Yeah, I guess it's a part of my kind of superhero experience that I hadn't really dipped my toe in yet. And yeah, like you said, it's past time.
And I think I'd agree with you. DC does seem to be an exciting place at the moment, not just the absolute loud, but someone like Metamorpho, someone who I've always seen try to be resurrected. Now, in a comic like Metamorpho, does DC come to you? Do you come to DC? How does something like that work?
In this case, DC came to me because I was basically having a conversation with a few people about, like, at DC, about, like, just the ins and outs of, like, oh, okay, so you want to work with DC? That's great. We'd like to work with you. What do you see yourself doing? And I was having a thing, and I kind of sort of gave like the Jack Kirby answer, which is like, well, what do you got? Because I want to do something that's sort of out of the way, out of the ordinary. DC has this deep bench of these characters from the 70s, from like the DC Explosion era. I know Tom King just did a lot with a load of those old characters, but like all the first issue special crew. But like there's lots of places you can sort of dredge stuff up. So it's sort of, obviously the biggies, you know, you want to have a crack at. But like, I was really curious about like where they saw me. And like Katie Kubert, who was there, basically said, well, I've had a thought, what about Metamorpho? And I perked up because I was like, Metamorpho is one of my big heroes. And I was like, oh, and my immediate thought was, oh, I could do all the Bob Haynes stuff, all the like Ramona Fredon stuff.
None of the Justice League International stuff.
I mean, I read Justice League International at the time, I like it. We are kind of consciously going right back to the 60s with this.
Cool.
And it is, we're kind of keeping it in continuity, and there will be explanations for why, you know, the supporting cast are all Hale and Hardy again. Explanations will come, but for now we just want to hit the ground running and just like introduce you to the gang, and like, here's Metamorpho, here's deal, here's everybody's deal, you know, have fun with it. And then later we'll kind of get into just tying the knots and like working out how the continuity would all squares up.
And got plans for that. Steve Lieber's a great, great choice for a 60s Silver Age look and feel, definitely.
I love Steve. I love working with Steve. He's been a delight. just nothing but a delight. I really, really like the way he just adds little touches to everything. Because, I mean, when I first like got introduced to him, I was like, listen, tell me how much structure to give you, because, to, you know, my understanding is that you sort of do a lot of fun storytelling beats. And he was like, oh, no, those are often dictated by the writer. And I was like, okay, well, I better get my game up. So I'm like up there with, you know, Nick Spencer on Superior Foes and like Matt Fraction on Jimmy Olsen. And, you know, I'm doing my best to like keep up and give Steve the kind of scripts that are worthy of him. But also Steve does add a lot of really fun background details and little storytelling details and like bits and pieces here and there in ways that just add so much character.
It must be a huge joy as a writer seeing these pages come in, not knowing what to expect and then being blown away.
I do love it. I always love seeing pages come in. Because basically Steve sends like the layout with how he sees the speech bubbles going.
Right.
And then he sends for links as well at the same time. So when I get a chance to do the lettering draft, very little changes because I kind of know it's all been planned for. There's very little. I think in issue one there was one panel that I thought I'd made too silent, but like that's the only time I really changed anything, I think.
Right.
I mean a little tweaks to the dialogue. It's like the lettering draft is like your final opportunity to like polish.
Right, yeah.
Before the because it's not good to do after the letter has done their work. It's not good to be making changes. You want to make as few changes as possible after that point. But the lettering draft, I think that's fair game. You can basically polish it up, but also I don't want to move stuff around too much if Steve's already laid it out.
Right.
Laid out the art according to where he sees the balloons going. So I try, what I give Steve is like as close to a final draft as I can do. And then I'll tweak it a little bit here and there. I always like to trim when I can. If I feel like a balloon's got too many words in it, I'll trim because that more space for the art.
Of course, yeah.
But it's fun. I mean, issue one is now being lettered and I think got to press, and it's.
I know you've got a few interviews lined up on Tuesday through DC and Wednesday and Thursday. Do you know this?
I know about the Tuesday ones. The Wednesday and Thursday ones, I don't think I know yet. But like,
I'll show you the email then.
No, I got an email from Michael going like, oh yeah, we need you. Because I basically said, look, they were like, when can you do next week? And I was like, well, I can't do Monday because I'm coming back from Thought Bubble. Every other day of the week. Yeah, it's fine. Just, you know, make it like in the morning your time, because otherwise it'll be.
Yeah.
And yeah, and it's fine. I can take a little bit out of every afternoon to talk Metamorpho for a while. You know, as I practice,
yeah,
I'll probably come up with better answers.
Now, I'm not going to ask too much about the first issue because I don't want to know too much, but I'm interested in Cyclops and this how's it put? The assassin with the same powers as Metamorpho, who we do see in the unlettered preview pages that we've been shown.
Menace, the Menace of Mr. Three. That was fun. I was basically thinking who'd be a good first issue bad guy. And it was like, it's got to be somebody kind of in the spirit of the old Bob Haney stuff. But also somebody who'll be a kind of good foil. And I mean, where Metamorpho is all about like the elements, and in particular the elements of the human body, Mr. Three's thing is that he can become any one of the three states of matter. So he can become a solid, a liquid, or a gas. So it's a look like that same kind of sciencey vibe.
Yeah, yeah.
But in a villain, and yeah, there's It's going to be fun. I got when we came up with the name Mr. Three, we got to make a lot of three related gags. He loves the number three. He's really into it. But like, yeah, there's a lot of fun. It's something I feel like you could probably. It's one of the few books I've done where I feel like, no, you could hand that to a kid on Christmas morning and be like, this will teach them some stuff.
Oh, that's tremendous, that is. See yeah. what I did there?
Yeah.
It does look like a fun comic. It does look like a humorous comic. Is humour hard to write? Or does the artwork inspire you?
I mean, obviously I have to write the gags before I see the art, because I try and give Stevie like a full script.
Of course.
But like, no, I like writing comedy. It's a weight off. I definitely kind of... yeah, I definitely feel like it's... Some days it's trickier than others, but it's like... I do find it relatively easy to sort of slip into that mode. And sometimes, like, you'll be working on a scene and jokes will suggest themselves. Yeah, I quite like comedy. It's a fun thing. I feel like I do a lot of quite dark and serious stuff, and it's really good to stretch that other muscle.
Yeah.
And it's good to have a comic that's sort of quite light and breezy. I kind of feel like people do need that. It's, you know, people obviously need the other stuff as well. It's like, it's good to kind of look some stuff in the face sometimes, but like, I don't think there's anything wrong with just taking 20 minutes out of your day and just escaping into a comic.
That's
just fun.
I think particularly right. as Absolute Universe seems to be bringing the dark back into DC again. And it does, I mean, I love Mark Russell's writing, his satire of big corporations, something I can buy into. I'm assuming Simon Stagg is going to be more of the straight man to Rex Mason.
Simon Stagg is much as he was in the 60s.
Right.
I do get to play a little bit with my dislike of billionaires with Simon Stagg. Because the nice thing about Simon Stagg is that he's like, as they said in the 60s, he's an all-around fink. He's like, he's a bad person. He's like, there's nothing particularly nuanced about him. He's just like a kind of creepy guy. He's sort of like constantly kind of sucking up to Metamorpho for his power, and at the same time sending him into these dangerous situations, and like, you know, always coming up with these sort of billion-dollar schemes. He's kind of like, he's sort of lovable in that, like, that there's an air of harmlessness about him, but I like that there's a kind of, you can just write the worst person in the world, and that's fine, you know. It's like, it's all right to have this kind of... So, yeah, you know, Simon Stagg gets into a lot of stuff. Java is a little different to how he was in the 60s. I kind of embraced sort of very much the Jeff Lemire, like Mark Russell view of him. In that, like, he's... In the 60s, he was just this big, big, dumb caveman. We play him as, like, very smart, but also just like the straight man, constantly just sighing at all of this nonsense around him. But yeah, he's a very smart guy. He's very, you know, he's a very sad guy. He's lost everything. And now he's stuck with looking after Simon Stagg. So, you know, it's not fun to be Java. And like, you know, he hates Rex. He really dislikes Rex a lot. And I mean, we kind of make that like quite nuanced in that, like, there's a sort of reason to like not like Rex that much. He's sort of, you know, it was like, it's okay that they don't get along. But we have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun playing this whole gang. They all bounce off each other in different ways.
Different personalities.
That's really fun to just throw them all together and have them, like, yeah, it's all good.
And at some point, I'm assuming you get to revisit Rex's quite hokey origins. Is there any twists and turns that you've found you can add to that?
We get into that whenever we can. We do, in issue one, we do the origin of Metamorpho in a sort of slightly Morrison-y way. In that, you know, we do the basics. And then in issue three, we go back to it because there's a big Rex and Java argument, and Rex brings up, oh, actually, do you remember when he hit me with a rock in the pyramid? But I've made a lot of effort to keep in the bit where Rex is, like, ferried by an ancient gizmo towards, like, the mystery meteor. It's like, because I really love that stuff. I think, I mean, it looks great. Ramona Fredon drew it fantastically. It's a really great sort of... But yeah, I do keep, yeah, we keep the origin as intact as we possibly can. We keep in the stuff Mark Waid did recently in World's Finest. So we keep that element of the origin intact. And in fact, we refer to it in issue one. But like, also we're keeping as much of the Bob Haney intact as we possibly can.
Was it fun going back to read all of those earlier issues by Bob Haney?
Yeah, they're really hard to find now.
Does DC not help you out with those kind of things, even if it's just PDF copies, or have they not got those?
I don't think there are other PDF copies. There's like, I don't believe, unless something's changed in recent times, I don't know if they're on DC Infinite.
Right. Maybe they will be in the next few
months. I do have somewhere around a... Well, you remember those old Essential, those phone books?
I do, light? Yes.
They made one of those for Metamorpho, and I do have that, so I do have reference materials if need be. And, you know, I can, you know, it's nice to go back and check out all the old things. And also, we're trying to do stuff like, back in the 60s, you had the opening page of every issue had, like, the cast list.
Of course, yeah.
And then the villain of the issue introduced. And we do that, and we do, you know, a kind of symbolic splash to kind of start things off. It's fun. It's a sort of old mode of comics, but it's one that I think has a lot of juice in it. And it does require kind of taking maybe a step back from the idea that, like, yeah, you know, comics, they're not for kids anymore. They're serious business. And it's like, no, not this one. This one's kind of for all ages.
Yeah.
And it's fun, and you can just kick back if you're feeling blue and like pick up a copy of Metamorpho, and hopefully it'll lift your spirits briefly.
Put a bit of fun back into funny books.
Ideally, yes.
Yeah, and no, those tend to be the comics I tend to lean to more and more. So I'm very, like I said, very excited about Metamorpho number one. Now, leaving the big three aside, and I'll wrap up with this question, because I dare say you've been, well, I know you've been asked about Batman. Leaving the big three aside, what kind of characters would interest you in the future? Or are you able to bring those into Metamorpho when and as you see fit?
Yeah, well, I do like bringing... There's one weird character of... old DC, which I do get to bring into Metamorpho, and I won't spoil that. But when the issue drops, you'll be astonished that we went there. But yeah, basically anybody kind of weird, anybody who's like, I'd love to do stuff with Cobra and his weird twin, his twin brother, who's like just this dude. It astonishes me, like, because I read all the John Ostrander Cobra stuff where he's like this huge Bond villain, this gigantic terrorist leader who's like, you know, really serious business. And then you go back and read the original Cobra, and it's like, oh, and also he's got this twin brother who's like just this guy who's like, I really want to find out more about this guy. Or like Eclipso, like, yeah, you know, when an eclipse comes, it's Eclipso.
Yeah.
And suddenly there's like a lot of eclipses. That's like...
Do you ever remember that Eclipso special with the diamond in the eye?
Oh, yeah.
Which still gets in my comic collection and ruins the comics above it.
Yeah, no, I remember that. That was amazing. That was like the silver age of cover gimmicks.
But it was Bart Sears on art, and I loved his artwork at the time, so it just blew me away.
Bart Sears was great. He had this kind of physicality that was like, It's hard to describe without sounding like, but he had this really hyper real physicality about everything, which was just really kind of...
There was a definite fluidity. You could see in both male and female figures he was drawn, particularly in the team book, Justice League, international. Yeah. You can see it all the way through.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, he was great about this. But, like, yeah, Eclipso was kind of... that was interesting. But, like, going back and looking at, like, the original things, there's a lot you can do with all of these old DC characters.
So you're mining the depths of the Silver Age by the sound of things, where a lot of the fun was happening.
I do like the depths of the Silver Age. I like the kind of... Because I was never... I mean, I'm a sort of DC kid of the 80s. What always says I'm of the Wally West generation, where it was like... So, you know, the return of Barry Allen, it was like kind of a weird time for me, because it was like, I don't... this is for the generation above me. And I'm pretty old, but like, it's no, and now Wally West is kind of back, but it's like in the 80s, I think that was like the first flush of like going back and looking at, because you had Morrison's Animal Man, like, had loads of these old characters,
yeah,
and a few that Grant invented just to kind of, that had the feel of old characters, but were just completely new inventions. But like, yeah, you know, I mean, swing with Scooter, why not? There's a whole lot that can be kind of, that you can do with DC, I feel like.
And it sounds like a perfect tone. You said you're going for a 60s vibe, you've got the best artist who can sort of encapsulate that 60s look, and it sounds like not only the characters you're creating, but the ones you are mining from DC, the ones we haven't seen yet. Like I said, it sounds like it's been a great book.
I feel like there are some characters with like really strong connections to Metamorpho that have never been connected to Metamorpho. And that's, you know, that's all I'll say about that for fear of spoilers. But like, I'm really interested in those sort of sideways connections that maybe people haven't made before. But yeah, that's what I'm trying to do in this. And obviously, I just really like the idea of like, doing a big mystery, like who the mystery villain is, and it's also like this Silver Age acronym, you know, agency. It's like, but yeah, there is a big brain behind Cyclops, and you have seen him before.
Interesting. I'm glad you've gone back to Cyclops, because you sidestepped that question earlier, which I thought was very clever. And it's a great ending point as well. So thank you for your time, particularly on a very, very busy weekend, Al. I'm always appreciative.
Oh, no, this is a break for me. It's good.
And I really am looking forward to Metamorpho. Otherwise, I wouldn't have asked you for an interview, mate.
Well, yeah, good chatting. And I guess this is good practice for like my week of interviews that I've got to do.